Alright everyone, this is Christoph Kemper, founder of the Link Research Tools, creator of Link Detox and a link building and SEO podcast. And today we got a very special guest in this episode. His name is Bill Oslowski and he's the patent guy, or at least I just made up the word, this name, patent guy. Bill, maybe some words about yourself. What's your background? What's your history? And what's this patent thing that I keep referring to?
I started working on the web in mid-1990s when I built a website for a couple friends and helped promote it and having it put on search engines too, which was interesting. You know, the first time you see an Alta Vista, the first time you see Google, had to figure out how it works and why you want to be on there, and it made sense to be on those. So I started that in the mid-90s. By the time I'd been doing it, I started looking at patents, how to improve the SEO I was doing. And they weren't like exact road of how to do SEO better. So the first one showed you how to use geographic signals on your pages better. Because a site I was doing SEO for was located in Delaware. So they were searching for Delaware. Make sure they could find it. That patent really helped me rank well for phrases that were related to the location. I started looking at others too, and one of the ones I've looked at Google came out with in the last year were the context vectors, where they you have some words that have meaning, like a horse. A horse to is something you ride around on. A horse thing is something that you, a vault that you perform tricks on. A horse is a tool that you use to saw wood on. What this patent says is knowledge bases like Wikipedia, meanings of words like horse, and assign them numbers based on how often they show up in a knowledge base. And that might determine a probability of which horse is being talked about. So it's actually a way to think about keywords when you're doing keyword research. And you go to Wikipedia, and it uses words like thoroughbred or so on. Those are words that maybe you should use in your article. It's related to that type of horse.
Okay. Which give this horse the actual context that you are interested in, and only the connotation of the word horse with the related, contextually relevant words to that type of horse makes sense then.
Right. Context makes a big difference to a search engine.
Yeah, I agree. I think this has been around for basically forever. Or also makes sense from a gut feeling perspective, or from a, you know, this is how I would see it. But I agree. You know, when you have a patent on that kind of concept, it's more or less also very, very likely that things like that or things based on that are implemented that way. And we've seen that with so many other technologies and concepts, especially in spam fighting. Spam fighting, link spam, or any type of web search engine spam, right?
So another patent that I'm looking at right now is the one that's co-written by a guy named Navneet Panda. And that may be a name recognizable to a lot of people who do SEO. And it has to do with duration of visits to a site from search results. So if somebody performs a query for a certain term, clicks on a search result, spends a certain amount of time there, and then returns back to the search results and searches again, Google might record that time that people spent going to that result. That seems like something that we've sort of assumed that Google's been doing for years. It has that feel to it. I mean, I remember telling people in forums, it's likely Google does that. But last few years, you see search engineers saying, we don't record user data. It's too noisy. Does it mean anything? I mean, this is Panda who wrote this. So, site quality engineer for Google. And
yeah,
if somebody clicks on a result, spends time there, that means it's more likely a high quality result than a low quality result.
Right. And when Google says we do not record user data, they might refer to this as personally identifiable data, as something that falls into privacy laws.
Right.
And not aggregated behavior.
Some spokespeople say we don't use user clicks in an algorithm because it's too noisy information. People abuse it too much. People have bots. And so on, where they might focus upon something and get something, certain queries clicked upon a lot. You know?
Yeah, I had those bots 10 years ago.
Right. And Google uses logins. They know who's clicking on things. I mean, we've got Andrew and cookies and so on. And
So you mean they can now easier filter that from
it's spamming maybe not that quite so trouble. Noisy.
I agree. Yeah, I can certainly personally say that I did my experiments in 2008 already with click-through rates from the SERP and had some impact, even with, you know, simple stuff via Amazon Turk. I mean, maybe not so simple for some, but basically have tons of people from different places click on one specific result with one specific goal to get it higher up in the search results. And that made an impact, definitely. Even when the click stopped for a while to fade off after some time. So there is I have no reason to believe that they would not be doing that, except that they are filtering that now and basically cope with manipulation and with people trying to game all these signals. So is this something, you know, when you hear the statement, the signal is too noisy, something that could be true for one market or for one sector could be wrong for the other?
This patent came out in December. Panda came out with a new one just within the past month. It was a continuation patent. It was rewritten. And it had to do with clicks also. What it said was they'll look at clicks in search results and look at repeat clicks. So if a person searches and chooses the same site using different queries, it's an intentional visit to that site. and means that site is a higher quality site.
Yeah, makes sense.
So they're saying that the site is relevant to the query terms being used to find it, and it's considered an important site to the people searching for it. If you may not remember this, because not too many people talked about it, but Microsoft about 10 years ago was on a big refinding kick, where they talked a lot about refinding search results. And it's sort of the same concept. Do people refine certain search results? If they try to find the same page using different queries and they select that page, that means that page probably has some value. It's a higher quality page.
So if the same page gets clicked through and visited from two different queries, it has a higher quality page, not only because it ranks for the two different queries, but because people also choose it to answer the
query. Right. That patent, they start off by saying, okay, we're going to rule out navigational queries. We're going to not count things like a search for ESPN, which people do to find the URL easily.
So just for our listeners, a quick intro. Navigational queries is what? What do people type in? What classifies as navigational?
Navigational query is a query that someone performs where they have a certain site in mind intentionally they want to go to. And they're performing the search to make it easy to get there.
Basically, just type in the domain name, www.linkresearchtools.com, just to find linkresearchtools.com homepage as first result, and I click on that. Okay. And when they use navigational queries to visit a specific site, does that give that site also higher authority or let's say, more reputation in Google results that could help it rank
better?
Well,
this patent was saying we're not going to include those. We're not going to look at those because we want to rule those out. We want to look at other queries that people use to find these pages. We want to ignore the navigational results. So if someone searches for toxic links and finds your page knowing that, and that's a repeat click on the same page for a slightly different query with a search result that's not navigational. So that's a sign that your page is high quality.
Okay. Got it. And this, of course, makes using, what we discussed before, contextually relevant words on the page or variations of a phrase useful and helpful anyways. I just remember something that I hear popping up over and over and over again called latent semantic indexing. I'm not sure if that's a thing that applies here. It just remembers me because that was like the buzzword that people used for using just different phrases in body copy. In
the year 1990, some researchers at Microsoft, including one named Susan Dumas, who invented a process called latent semantic indexing, and it was intended to be used with enterprise data sets, big, like 10,000 document long corpus of documents, static, that didn't change much. It would take that 10,000 document corpus and get an idea of what all the words were and all the pages and create an index that showed how the words were related to each other. Okay, the system wouldn't work on a index that constantly changed, like the web. You know how the web changes all the time?
Of course, yeah.
So latent semantic indexing doesn't work with the web. Now, Google did come out with something called probabilistic latent semantic indexing, which is a more statistic-based approach that does work with something like the web. But it's different from LSI, and LSI doesn't really apply.
It's funny, yeah. Of course the web changes. I get this interesting question sometimes when we talk about, you know, analyzing link data, and, you know, Link Research Tools has this thing that you don't have anywhere else, where we take whatever link data we can buy from all these places, 25 sources, and recrawl it at the point in time when we do the analysis. And sometimes the link data is up to 5 years old.
Wow.
And of course, there is a lot of changes. There's a lot of links dropping. There's a lot of new links popping up. And sometimes 10% get lost or get deleted. Other 40% extra links get added because we knowingly ignore the robots.txt and so find all kinds of black hat links that, you know, people block in, let's say, bigger link database engines. And so we suddenly find them after recrawling them. And so people then are constantly shocked about the stuff that we see or how it's different suddenly. And I say, well, if you take a five-year-old web, what did you do 5 years ago on the web? My homepage certainly looked different, and everything was different 5 years ago. So what do you expect? Interesting. Yeah? It's actually a nice comparison here. Well, when we talk about spam, when we talk about link issues, when we talk about all kinds of let's say PR or strategy that Google implemented over all these years, trying to game search engine optimizers, to make people not try to manipulate the engines with the filters or with the penalties. What do you think where we stand today? What do you think where Google stands today in regards to fighting paid links or any kind of manipulation, be it, you know, with the click-throughs or any kind of simulation of artificial user behavior? What's your take on that?
I've seen some things from Google that really haven't been talked about very much by people that could have some impact. One that started coming out of Google in 2004 or so was phrase-based indexing. And what that says is that some pages tend to have words that show up on them, phrases that show up on them that predict the appearance of other phrases. So if you have a page that's about baseball stadiums, there's a good chance that you have phrases such as pitcher's mound, dugout, left field. And these words tend to co-occur on pages about baseball stadiums. And they mean this page is about baseball stadiums. So Google has taken their inverted index of the web and added a layer to it that includes phrases like that. And it was surprising seeing a second generation of patents involving phrase-based indexing. They talked about how they built it into their index of the web, but it's there. So it has to do with different words and phrases that tend to co-occur on your page about a certain topic. And Google tracks that. It's not quite semantic. It's not latent semantic indexing. It's pages that include these words tend to be about this. So it's a good strategy for if you want your page to rank well for a certain topic. You find highly ranked pages about that topic on the web and look for words that tend to reoccur on those pages. And then make sure you include them on your page.
So whatever the opinion on first and second and third up to 10th search result would be, if I would aggregate the opinions and the sayings from the first 10 search results, would that make me the number one, you know, like Wikipedia often does, you know, having all these different view angles, viewpoints?
It's possible.
Yeah. Makes sense to me. I think also from a Google perspective, trying to bring in those different views
and
of different
things. It fits well with that context vector approach.
Awesome. Bill, how many patents do you read per week or per month? Or how many have you read in the first place? How many in total? Is it 100 or is
I usually 500? Read about 5 to 10 a week. And I've been doing that since 2005?
Oh, wow. Yeah. 2015, that's 22 years.
2005 till now, yeah.
That's 22 years. That's 8,000 and something days.
Well, I'm curious. I want to have an idea of how they do what they do.
So if I calculate that and I just give you one patent a week, that's 1,100. I'll make it two patents. That's 2,300 patents at least. That's a lot. Congratulations. And I think, you know, the patent guy or Mr. Patent is a good nickname for you here. I don't know anyone in the industry or anyone in the world that has that experience and that hobby. And I think, you know, you really stand out with this, and I thank you very much for discussing some of that knowledge with you. I think we could go on for days or weeks just talking about that, but we're already stretching the limit of what I planned for 10 to 15 minutes. We're here at minute 26, 27 now, actually. So if you would have some major takeaway or one tip to share with our audience, something, you know, a giveaway, maybe, is there something that comes to mind?
Every once in a while, I'll publish something about something I'll call continuation patent. And a continuation patent is one that's been published before, but they've had to update the claims in the patent to describe how it's being used now and how it's being used differently. And those really sort of provide some insight into how Google might be doing something that they are quite likely, quite possibly doing. Because you can't be sure when they come out with the patent if they're actually following the process in it. Because sometimes it's, you know, it's like a ranking process. It's impossible to see.
But that continuation patent is like an update where they have to. Is that by patent law required?
If they
have to update
to continue to have the protection of the patent and go back to the date the original version started offering them protection, they've got to publish continuation patent. And they may change all the claims around, but you can sort of look at the old claims and compare them to new claims and say, these are the things that changed.
Got it. So that's actually the goal then, to find the secret Google tricks, to find out what Google is very likely doing or not doing, or not doing anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. Where can we read all that, Bill? What's the website where you publish that?
Okay, I've been publishing a lot of that on my site, SEObytheSea.com. I also am the director of SEO research for GoFish Digital, a firm in Virginia. And I publish at least two articles a month on their blog. And those are often about SEO patents.
Wow. Yeah, thank you very much for that, Bill. And I want to wrap this up here. It was an honor to have you on my podcast. And I would be happy to invite you again as people get back to us. And here's a couple questions that we have on Facebook that I didn't even get to. So I think it's a sure thing you have to come again. The interest is there, certainly. But maybe this one here from Jesse McDonald. I think you said it again in the beginning, but what originally got you interested in looking at patents, like the real reason you wanted to see it? Maybe just in one sentence.
Everything's such a mystery. And being able to peek behind the curtain sort of feels good. Say, yeah.
It feels good, yeah, to know, to figure out. I like that. Okay, and this one here is great too from Sebastian. If you could name one already filed patent to watch out in the future for, which would it be? Maybe in the form of a continuation patent. Is there one patent where you're awaiting the continuation patent?
I'm keeping a careful eye on all the phrase-based indexing patents because I think there's a lot of potential with those and how important the words are in anchor text in making a page linked to more relevant for that anchor text. And people don't talk about that too much.
Brilliant. Okay, and the final question from the audience that just came in from Jim Hatcher. Yeah. I'm sure you know him as well. With all the patents that you read with the USPTO, and you know more than Google patent lawyers probably know about their own patents, how many patents are actually filed for ideas or technologies that never actually get developed, and why?
There's such a wide range. It's hard to say. When I go through a list of patents that were granted to Google for the week, and there might be 40 or 50 of those, maybe 10 of them are related to search. Some of them are related to images, and some are related to new technology like notebooks or cameras or phones. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Google has been diversifying in other areas. They've been building medical devices. So see some of those too.
Awesome. All right. Those were three bonus questions from the audience right live from the Facebook feed here. Thank you very much, Bill Zdarsky. It was amazing to have you here. My name is Christoph from Link Research Tools. I hope to have you here again soon. Everyone out there, watch out for this and more from Bill, Emmy, and
you too. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.